the underlying thing is about trust. How do you maintain this trust? So, what is it? What is trust? Well, politicians know that they're unpopular and not to be trusted. And that's exhibited when they're in a hole on television or on the radio. They'll put forward a doctor because they know doctors are believed, politicians aren't. A recent Mori poll showed that 39%, a minority in the country, trust politicians, but 87% trust doctors, nurses and healthcare workers, professionals. So how can... But the interesting thing about the doctors one and the healthcare professionals is that although it's 87%, it reduces year on year. So what can we do? How can we strengthen the trust that's so essential in the work that we do? And it's the work in the NHS, the work in the church, and it's work for politicians. Now, I want to draw on the work of Larry Reynolds and the trust effect. And he starts with some core principles. First of all, competence. We have to earn trust, and to do so, people must believe that we are competent. Competent as practitioners, teachers, mentors. We have to be foolproof when it comes to not only theory or theology, but equally important, in practice. Competence is about skill, and it's also about instilling confidence in others. I was recently in hospital, and a consultant decided he was going to take a blood sample. And I could see that he was very nervous. And I think he was nervous because he probably hadn't taken one for 10 years. After he'd had three goes, I felt like saying to him, "Oh, for heaven's sake, give it to the nurse." Because I just knew the nurse was a phlebotomist and she would do it well. So it's about being competent, and people do respect skills. The next core is openness. And Larry Reynolds states that high trust teams take every member of the team into their confidence. What a telling phrase. Taking people into your confidence means being open, honest, and truthful. No secretive plans, no Russian dolls, no agendas within agendas, whether it's a parish, a hospital, a community team, a government. Openness, honesty, and truthfulness are essential if we're going to build and maintain trust. Being competent and open is not enough. People will only trust us if we're reliable, and that means dependable and consistent. Reliability is about keeping to our promises. And one of the maxims in my commercial organisation is we never let people down. And if rarely we do, we apologise very fast. So it's about doing what you say you will. It's about turning up when you say you will. It's about keeping to time. And I think it's such a mistake to be late. It's so rude to be late. It's saying, my time is valuable. Yours is unimportant. And of course, not turning up at all is even worse. And it was Groucho Marx who said, the world is run by people who turn up. The final principle of core, of this core, is equity. Equity or fairness. To build or maintain trust, decisions have to be carried out fairly. And the balancing act is assessment and not making assumptions. Because what appears fair to one person may appear totally unfair to another. And that is why high trust organisations don't assume they know what's best for people. They take time and trouble to find out what really concerns their patients and their colleagues. Now, I'm going to go down the right side of the model. And this is about the organisation. And then I'm going to continue up round the left side, and that's about you as individuals. If you're in charge, if you have some authority, if you're competent, you'll choose the right people. Now, not everyone has the potential to be competent in everything, and you may trust someone to perhaps take the Turin's liturgy, but you certainly wouldn't put them in charge of the labour ward. High trust organisations put a lot of effort into choosing the right people. Putting teams together is a great skill, and so many teams are dysfunctional because there's no trust between the members and no common values. Common values define the way we behave. This is the way we do things around here. In these situations, this is how we behave. And being a Christian, I think, is a great start. The values we hold are common to us all. We know with the increasing sophistication of healthcare and the complexity of the world, not everyone can know everything or do everything, so teamwork is essential. And with a shortage of clergy, I think building and maintaining a team is absolutely critical. If we value openness in our organisations, we will tell them the score. Now, I want you to imagine being on a scientific expedition in a tropical swamp. You're up to your knees in putrid water, not knowing what's lurking underneath. The humidity is killing, the ticks are devouring your legs. Every day you're told how many miles you need to cover and what experiments have to be carried out. The expedition is fortunately very well resourced and it's well equipped. The only thing is, you don't know what it's for, where you're going, how well it's progressing. So you ask the leader, and the reply is, "It's confidential. I can't tell you, and anyhow you wouldn't understand." What does that do for motivation? What does that do for your trust in your leader? So I think there's no trust without honesty and openness. At one time, health professionals refrained from telling the truth to patients in the belief that they didn't want to know. But research has shown that not knowing actually impedes recovery. Today, people want and expect to know the score, and many will trust the chaplain because he or she is not part of the workforce, not part of management, doesn't have an axe to grind, a neutral person, a person to be trusted. Reliability is about accountability. If people are to be trusted, they must account for their actions. Getting away with it erodes trust in an organisation. A sloppy organisation is not respected and miserable to work in. Of course people make mistakes and there's room for forgiveness, but forgiveness is only given where there's a realisation of wrongdoing in the first place. Part of equity, or being fair, is to identify concerns, and it's no good leading a workforce or a team which is full of hidden concerns. You need to know what's top of the worry list and take them into account. A true professional knows whether, in healthcare or in the church, how important it is to identify the concerns of patient, friends, family, colleagues. Things that may be trivial in ordinary circumstances take on a different dimension when someone is very ill or even knows that they're shortly going to die. Similarly, in an organisation, small concerns suddenly grow, rumours spread, and the wholesomeness of the organisation putrefies, making it a miserable place in which to work. Lead decisively. In the work I did for the Royal College of Physicians, we talked a lot about leadership. Leadership at three levels. First, yourself as an individual, as a professional. Whether you like it or not, for some people around you, you are a leader. You are a role model for them. They will see how you behave. They will follow your example or not. They may be ancillary staff, they may be junior members of the workforce, or they may be part of your peer group. The second tier is leadership of a team. Again, how you behave, supporting or denigrating colleagues, the values you hold to, and whether you actually live by them. Values such as kindness, politeness, diligence, and so on. Your leadership within the team will be noticed, remarked upon, and discussed. And third, your leadership within the organisation. How you talk about it. Do you talk it up, or do you simply whinge? How you treat colleagues. How you lead a change, with confidence or half-hearted. decisive leadership is so much respected. And there's a lot of debate going on at the moment about management and leadership. Do you have to be a manager to lead? Do you have to be a leader to manage? And I think the very best definition came from Viscount Slim, great leader of the Second World War. And Viscount Slim said, "Leadership is of the spirit, compounded of personality and vision. Its practice is an art. Management is more of the mind, a matter of calculations, statistics, timetables and routines. Its practice is a science. Managers are necessary. Leaders are essential." An aspect of reliability is whether you act with integrity. I feel like asking you, hands up those of you who've had a builder who said, "I'll be there on Tuesday and finish the job," and has actually done so. And I have to say, our builder in Newark is known as the most promising man in Newark. But how about the colleague who said, "I'll find out and ring you back straight away," and has done so? The users of our services are given appointments, and some are cancelled at the last minute, and our users are not impressed. Their trust has been eroded, and not just in that institution, but worse, in the whole of the NHS. So whatever our position, we are all leaders in this room today. People will think that we are fair and equitable if we do what we say. We will be judged by our actions, not our words. Listening to people is simply not enough. We have to act, and to act with integrity. Part of openness is giving feedback. If you want people to believe you, you must be open and honest. You have to tell them what you think of them, and more precisely their behaviour, and that's very tricky stuff. Straight talking is rare, but giving honest feedback enhances a trust-based relationship, provided it's done well. She tells you how it really is. He tells you what he thinks. She's straight with you, and how valuable that is. Part of competence is continuing to learn. The only way to stay competent is to keep learning. So congratulations to everybody here today. Mistakes are made when people believe they know it all, and too many mistakes diminish trust. A thirst for learning is essential because techniques, language, processes, science and society are all on the move, and we have to keep up with it. So in conclusion, as professionals, either in health or in the church, as chaplains and the like, you start from a strong trust base. As supervisors, leaders, managers, it is more difficult. As politicians, we have a great lot to regain in terms of trust. We are all expected to be competent, open, reliable and trustworthy to manage an increasingly demanding and difficult world. And I think that is where prayer and personal belief is so critical. In the House of Lords, we start every day with a prayer. We're fortunate to have bishops and archbishops as members of the House. And I wouldn't dream of entering a debate without attending prayers. When Lord Brennan collapsed in the House of Lords and was brought back to life by Lord Darcy, both noticed that the Archbishop of York was praying. Later I heard the Archbishop say, "People ask me, why do I pray? If you get the results you want, it's only coincidence." Well, he went on to say, "I agree with Archbishop Temple, who said, I just find the more I pray, the more coincidence seem to happen." And I so agree with that. Right now, there's much to pray for, not least for those who work in healthcare, sometimes at huge personal cost to themselves and their families. But we should also pray for politicians who have the difficult task and the huge responsibility to govern one of this country's great institutions, our National Health Service, which after all was founded on a great Christian ethic, love thy neighbour as thyself.